You're listening to the RSA Conference podcast, where the world talks security.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to this edition of our RSAC 365 podcast series. Thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Tatiana Sanchez, with the RSA Conference team. AI has been a very popular topic over the past couple of years, which is why I'm excited to be joined by Abhilasha Bhargava-Sponsal, Heather Atkins, and Anshul Gupta, who discuss some AI-powered security solutions and use real-world examples from cloud security. Today's podcast is sponsored by Ariaka. It's time to make your network and security simpler and more flexible. Transform your experience with Ariaka's unified SASE as a service. The only solution that delivers performance, agility, simplicity, and security without trade-offs. Learn more at ariaka.com. Before we get started, I want to remind our listeners that here at RSAC, we host podcasts twice a month, and I encourage you to subscribe, rate, and review us on your preferred podcast app so that you can be notified when new tracks are posted. And now I would like to ask my guests to take a moment to introduce themselves before we dive into today's topic. Abhilasha?
Thank you, Tatiana. Welcome, everyone. My name is Abhilasha, and I am a partner security architect at Microsoft. It is great to have two amazing security thought leaders, Heather Atkins, VP of Security Engineering at Google, and Anshul Gupta, CVP of Office Product Group at Microsoft, here with us today. So many of us in security think of this as a chess game with an adversary. And we are here to talk about how we can strategically change that end game with AI-powered solution. But before we get into the details, Heather and Anshul, I would love if you can tell us something about your journey in cybersecurity, a fun fact, and key challenges. What are things which are top of your mind?
Thank you so much, Abhilasha. This is Heather Atkins, and I'll maybe jump in here first. So I've been in the cybersecurity field for a little over 25 years now, long before we called it cybersecurity, really. And it's been an incredible journey where I have seen us grow so much as an industry in terms of our thinking on the creation of safety defects in software and in infrastructure, and also the adaptation of all the threat actors globally in terms of how they are adjusting to each one of our mitigations and the kind of cat and mouse game, as you referred to. I'm really excited about the moment we are in right now, as I feel like for the first time in a long history that we have a scientific instrument available to us to deploy and use to actually get ahead of some of the most inherent vulnerability that we put into the internet when we created it. I think we don't quite realize it wasn't secure by design from the very beginning. I know a lot of practitioners coming into the industry are surprised by that. So I am incredibly positive, both from a defenses perspective and a kind of combating threats perspective, that we are going to finally overcome what some have called the defender's dilemma. I guess a fun fact about me is I like to study medieval history, which, unless you like medieval history, is not a fun fact. But I find a lot of inspiration in sort of how people's have thought and ideas over time and adapting those to kind of modern ways of thinking.
Yeah, thank you, Heather. I'm so happy to be on this podcast with two of my favorite people, Heather and Abhilasha. We have been partner in crime for a while, so I'm super, super excited here. I started my journey as an engineer and spent 15 years leading engineering teams, building data backup products, financial software, and identity products. I pivoted to security more than a decade ago, and have held CISO roles at Skype, Meta, etc. And I have handled some very interesting security incidents. And both of these ladies have been involved in those with me. So it has been an interesting journey. A fun fact about me, if I'm not working on a security challenge, I'm either hiking or gardening. Because I'm a firm believer that I think security experts spend way too much screen time, and nature is a big de-stressor.
Couldn't agree more, though. Anshul, I've seen some of the amazing fruits of, you know, the gardening. And it's great to learn. These fun facts are awesome because you get to know more about the person behind these major cybersecurity leadership that we see. So Heather also talked about the adaptation of adversaries and security by design. And Anshul, you've always been talking about right from the start, having the security practices built in. Do you have real-world examples how you integrate these security practices into product development?
Yeah, absolutely. And before I touch upon like why we need to build security practices early on into our product development process, I want to touch upon why we need to do this. This is an incident that shaped my thinking very early on as I took my first CISO role. I was standing in the lunch line and a dev standing next to me said, "Anshul, security team is requiring me to encrypt the data that my app is collecting before they will sign off on the release." Sounds very familiar, doesn't it? And he said, "If I use the APIs that they are providing, it adds significant delay to the response times of my app, and I can't do that. So I'm thinking of writing my own encryption that will be much faster, and that should help me get the sign off." And trust me, at that statement, all my alarm bells went off because I was like, oh, this dev is planning to roll his own crypto. That means we clearly failed as a security team. We are not meeting his requirements. He wants to ship a great user experience, and we are sort of adding a hurdle here. And that's how I feel like we as security experts should always think. Are we making the best security solutions that scale to the needs of our products and to our users? So Abhilasha, when I think about how should we engage with our engineering teams, we need to engage very early on during the dev cycle, starting from the requirements phase itself. And I personally think threat modeling is that one unique tool that allows you to do that. Because what we can do is we can engage on their architecture and design, and we can whiteboard. Like, there is no need for any fancy tools or anything. You can just whiteboard, educate your devs, and then help them see what the trust boundaries are, start thinking like adversaries. And that itself brings them along on the journey. And then they are not thinking about that security team is their adversary. They're thinking about, oh, here are the threats that can really bring my product or service down. So Abhilasha, as you know, and you have been very closely involved in this, at Microsoft, we do the required threat model training for every dev. And that's the reason we do it, because we want to make sure that they understand why we are doing it. They are not thinking of it as some checkbox exercise. They are along on this journey.
Yeah, totally love it. And I also love that approach where if someone is going off and writing their own crypto, you own the, you know, how you said you own the problem and see how to bring them along and simplify and think through it versus just enforcing it and saying that thou shalt. But bring them along. I think love that aspect of it. Thank you. Heather, what are your thoughts?
I've been really amazed at the past, say, 5 years or so. It's become really easy to become a developer. And if you think about the people writing phone apps today, web apps, etc., we've democratized coding in a lot of ways. The challenge for us then when we think about, you know, secure by design or kind of shifting left in terms of security is that there aren't just professionally trained programmers in the world today. We now have people writing code who may not necessarily have access to some kind of a large enterprise training program or professional certification of some kind. And I think what this underlines for me is that we need to take some of these concepts of securing the developer tool chain, for example, and giving them templating systems and giving them frameworks and tools that actually just make the whole design experience very safe. An example from kind of Google's past that we talk about in our book, Building Secure and Reliable Systems, is cross-site scripting errors. In the early days of Google, we had a I would say, almost a pandemic of cross-site scripting bugs. And we sort of realized that the developers at Google, despite the very talented workforce, were really struggling with getting HTTP input sanitization correct. So, you know, what the security team did, and I'll credit colleagues like Christoph Kern and others, is they went back and they said, you know, if you're going to write HTML, here's a templating system. Please don't write your own, you know, similar to the don't ruin your own crypto. Don't write your own HTTP. And by putting that into the tool chain today, if a developer at Google wants to write a web app, you know, they don't have to think about writing HTML. They don't have to worry about sanitizing the input. We've just put it right in the tool chain. And that has been the best way to scale. And I think as we think about the kind of millions, potentially billions of people, you know, now with generative AI that might be writing code, we're going to have at scale solutions that let, I would say, 80 to 90% of all use cases to be covered by tooling. We can't expect every human on the planet to have an expert sort of view on secure design and secure application implementation. Again, I'm an optimist. I think, you know, we have this new scientific instrument, generative models, that are really going to allow us to sort of help the developer in unique kind of ways.
Thank you, Heather. Those were excellent thoughts too, because we have indeed democratized coding, and the need to have that standardized tooling and protocols, and every time we diverge from the standards, you know, making sure that we have thought through the design, because it's not just a one-time thing. Once these products are launched, we, as you mentioned, it's not just about making sure that you did your due diligence at the time of coding. We need continuous assurance throughout that protect, detect, respond lifecycle. And you started by seeing how we can get ahead of the hyperscale. How can AI play a role in this lifecycle of continuous assurance?
I think a few things. You know, one, we estimate that there's somewhere on the order of 2.3 to 2.7 million open cybersecurity jobs in the world at the moment. That is an estimate. We are probably never going to fill all of those jobs with humans. And I think when we look at the people who are in this field, you know, we have a few kind of competing polarities. We have the amount of time it takes to skill up to do the work properly, and also burnout. And if you've been in a security job long enough, you know that there are repetitive tasks in the day. So this is one of the first areas that we've started looking at the use of AI for, is just how to either reduce or eliminate toil. A really great example is in our detection response team. The large majority of the analysis time in bringing together about 400 different pieces of telemetry data for any one incident, that's a data processing problem. And AI is very good at that. It doesn't have to be a decision maker. It can be a hypothesis builder. And the other piece that is really sort of toilsome on the other end is all of the human produced writing and authorship. And if you think about a good incident response process, you document every step you make, you write a really thorough report, you do a thorough postmortem. We actually think that automation, which, you know, is not the most exciting thing to talk about, but that the automation may improve the analyst experience significantly. And our early tests show about a 51% productivity increase just through using generative AI for summarization or writing drafts, for example. And that's not even the hard security problem. That's just unlocking the productivity of the workforce. And I think if we can do that, we won't have 2.3 million open cybersecurity jobs. We will be able to give our teams a really good leg up in moving quickly, having interesting work, and really using the human time where we need the human time. So that, I think, will have a huge impact. I think the other thing that we should think about is, I do believe, and I, you know, this is why Google's a sponsor of the DARPA Cyber Grand Challenge around finding vulnerabilities in code using large language models, is that if we can get the models right, we really do have an opportunity for developers to produce mostly bug-free code. And that's not something that's going to happen tomorrow. It may not happen in 5 years. But I think, you know, if we were to have this conversation in 10 years, we would find most developers are producing safe code. Now, either because we've given them templating systems, like I mentioned previously, or because we have enough assistance in the developer life cycle that their assistant is telling them they've written a bug long before it gets into production. And that's not 100% because you'll always have very complicated logic errors or kind of architecture problems that lead to significant vulnerability. But imagine if most of our buffer overflows, most of our cross-site scripting bugs, SQL injection, the basic things that we do understand very well, if those are gone, then our human time is spent on these much more complicated and important things. So that's two examples of where I think that we're going to get a leg up pretty quickly.
Thanks, Heather. That was great. You know, burnout is a real problem and close to heart. And unlocking productivity with the use of AI to write bug-free code and having that assistant throughout the lifecycle is key. Archil, would love to hear your thoughts on how we make AI as a continuous support throughout the lifecycle.
Yeah, definitely. When these days I hear discussions about AI, people are sometimes on two ends of the spectrum. Some folks would say, oh my God, AI is going to take over my job, or I don't trust AI as it will use my data inappropriately. And then there is this other end of the spectrum where it's like, AI will solve all the world's problems. To be honest, I feel AI is a solution that can help you be more effective and productive in your role. So I want to say plus one to whatever Heather said. Like, AI is definitely helping us scale in our SOC. It is helping identify misconfigurations early on in our, like, our footprint is huge. We are running two of the world's largest clouds here at Microsoft, M365 and Azure. So having a scale with what are the configuration challenges when we run these millions of machines, AI is helping identify those misconfigurations very early on, preventing incidents. But even in the SOC team, and Heather pointed this out, like, we have the shortage of skilled folks. And I want to pivot and say, how do we make sure that when we hire people, they do not have to understand 500 different databases that they have to query? And we are leveraging our security copilot to make sure that these humans don't have to remember 500 different databases. And this copilot, as the name suggests, it's a copilot. It will do some of this work for them. And it will identify what are the gaps. And by the time the incident reaches the security analyst, they have a lot of insights from these databases, from the logs, the correlation, and then they can very quickly respond, as Heather pointed out. Another area where AI can help in the response processes, like Log4j was a really good example. And I'll take Heather's term, pandemic of XSS. Now we are dealing with pandemic of software supply chain issues, and Log4j is one such example. And when we go looking for solutions for these, the problem is when Log4j happened, we all were literally like, oh my God, this is like somebody has asked me to look for salt in everything that I have in my pantry, every snack, everything, and a large, very large pantry when you think about like Google and Microsoft and some of these companies. So how do you get ahead of such challenges? This is where you have to think about how can AI help me when incidents like these will happen. And it's not about that these are the incidents of past. No, we will see more and more of these. And when those will happen, how can we very quickly identify what's going on? How can we get to the forefront of it and respond in real time and mitigate the risk for our customers very quickly?
Thank you, Archil. That was very insightful. And we could continue to learn from each other so much. But given the time, as we reflect on the valuable insights and the discussion we've had, what are some of those call for action for the audience that we can take?
I would say three takeaways for our audience. First one, build security in products from the get-go. starting with requirements and design phase, and use threat modeling or any similar tools that you have found useful. And definitely educate your engineering teams and bring them along on this journey. Second one is use AI to augment and scale your solutions for protect, detect, and respond phases of your product and services lifecycle. And the third one is don't hesitate to partner with different disciplines within your organization and across industry to build a safer community through products, because we are stronger together.
Couldn't say it better. We are indeed stronger together and putting it right from the beginning. Thank you, Archer. Hello. Would love to hear your thoughts as well.
I think it's important for organizations to realize that we are at a technology inflection point that suggests many of us who've been in the industry for a while need to reskill. So one of the first things I would recommend is helping the developer ecosystem where you are, whether it's open source or at a commercial company or at a university, go back to school, so to speak. There are a lot of great online courses now on machine learning, on using machine learning in the security context, and so much information coming out every single day, new advances, new models being released, new papers being published, new techniques being devised. There's no better time right now than to get out into your community, your developer ecosystem, and learn from each other to see what the best ideas that people are coming up with going forward. And I think this reskilling moment is incredibly important, especially for those who've maybe been in the field for 5 to 10 years, the continuous learning that's necessary to really stay on top of all the great technology advancements that are happening. The second thing that I'm pretty fond of is for teams to set a goal for themselves. It can be a ridiculous goal. 50% of all of our workflows should be AI assisted in some way. And you may never get to 50%, but it gives the team that you're working with the opportunity to the freedom, the permission to say, I want to go back and I want to look at all of the work that we're doing, whether it's something as simple as configuration checks, maybe ACL verification, maybe signal writing for detection pipeline, or maybe just large scale data analysis, and to say, where could the tools help me? Where could it help us? And to really ask the deep, tough question. But again, setting a goal kind of gives people a little bit of a nudge and a little bit of permission. And the third thing that I would recommend is to make sure that you clearly understand how you want your data to be used with regard to AI. And most companies, Google included, are now building out enterprise AI usage policies so that we can kind of clearly understand where do you want your data to be used to train, where do you want it to be captured as a prompt, or where do you need a lot more privacy control because the data you're putting in there is sensitive. Have a really clear view on that as an organization, as an open source team, etc. And I think that if you put that investment in upfront, given that we're going to use these tools for a very, very long time, it sets you up early at the beginning.
Thank you, Heather. That was excellent. Elevating cybersecurity with AI and upskilling, you know, we talked early on about cybersecurity landscape evolving rapidly. Couldn't close better with the importance of embracing learning and adapting with AI and be that change, as Archer also mentioned. So thank you once again. Big shout out to our insightful panelists for sharing your thoughts and your expertise, as well as RSA for giving us the opportunity for this podcast.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. Thank you, Abhilasha, Anshul, and Heather for being here today. It was really insightful, especially talking about AI and the solutions, just because it's a very popular trend and topic right now. Thanks again for being here today. Listeners, thanks for tuning in. To find products and solutions related to cloud security, we invite you to visit rsaconference.com/marketplace. Here you'll find an entire ecosystem of cybersecurity vendors and service providers who can assist you with your specific needs. Please keep the conversation going on your social channels using #RSAC. and be sure to visit rsaconference.com for new content posted year-round. Thank you and see you next time.